From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last debate in Boca Raton, Florida, foreign policy on the table. President Obama took aim at Mitt Romney's credibility. Not steady on the issues, he said.
On a whole range of issues, whether it's the Middle East, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Iraq, whether it's now Iran, you've been all over the map.
And Mitt Romney went after the president's record. Not, he charged, a pretty picture.
You look at the record of the last 4 years and say, is Iran closer to a bomb? Yes. Is the Middle East in tumult? Yes. Is Al-Qaeda on the run, on its heels? No.
Iran, Syria, Libya, Israel, a little Russia, a little China, all on the slate, plus closing arguments from the candidates. This hour on Point, the third and final presidential debate looking at the world. With us today from Washington is Elizabeth Buemiller, Pentagon correspondent and former White House correspondent for the New York Times. She's reported from abroad for years, author of Condoleezza Rice and American Life. Elizabeth Buemiller, welcome.
Good to be here, Tom. Thanks.
With us from Nashville, Tennessee is John Meacham, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of American Lion, Andrew Jackson in the White House. His new book, Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, out next month, contributing editor at Time Magazine, former editor of Newsweek, who was with us for debate number one. John Meacham, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. Hello, Jack.
As an
historian, Jack, you're a historian of World War I era. You must have savored all the talk of horses and bayonets last night.
I was in my element. Hello, Tom, Elizabeth, and John.
who would have thunk it? Horses and what next? You know, cannon rolling along. Elizabeth Buemiller, jump in here with us first. Here are these candidates on the stage. You've watched them through this long election season. Mitt Romney appeared to be hewing pretty close to President Obama last night. Did we have two different views of the world here, Elizabeth, or not?
Well, that's the question of the hour. What was most striking to me was to see that on major issues, that would be Iran sanctions, Afghanistan the troop withdrawal, jettisoning Mubarak in Egypt, U.S. military intervention in Syria, and drones, Romney agreed with Obama. And in some cases, these are very different positions than he's taken in the campaign so far. Now, he, of course, criticized the president, you know, overall for what he called a weak American foreign policy and, you know, where the United States is not in the same position in the world it was 4 years ago. But on the specifics and on the major, you know, foreign policy issues in front of these two men, he agreed with the president last night.
Well, how much fresh tacking was there in those Romney positions, Elizabeth? How different the president was making this charge? You just heard it there. Governor, you're all over the map. How much truth in that?
Well, on the Iran sanctions, he suddenly said he was for, he's taken a much tougher line in the past on Iran. This time he said that he was for peaceful and diplomatic measures. Said that, you know, war would be a last resort. Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan, he completely supported the president on withdrawing in 2014, the bulk of the U.S. forces. In the past, he has said that he would consult with the generals first and that he would, chase a terrorist down forever, implying that perhaps there'd be an endless war. And in Syria, he's taken a tough line in Syria. This time he said very emphatically, I do not want any U.S. military involvement in Syria, even though he's also said he wanted to provide more arms to the rebels.
Jack, the word peace came from the lips of Mitt Romney many times last night. It was seemed a very deliberate plan on his part to make sure that he was talking peace.
Yes, he wasn't channeling John Bolton, who was one of his advisors. He was channeling the realists in his camp, and he spoke of peace. He said, we can't kill our way out of these problems in the Middle East. He said he spoke of a sort of broad program of social reform in the Arab world, women's rights, economic development. In short, he sounded a lot like Barack Obama in 2008.
John, what was your impression of these two last night? Here we are, debate number three. In the first, they got to know each other kind of cold, and Romney was far better prepared. The second, Obama scratched back pretty hard. Here we are with the third and final debate. What did you see in the relation, the dynamic between these two contenders last night?
Well, for fans of the movie Mission Impossible, I think we finally saw the third example of Mitt Romney pulling off his face and his mask and becoming Mitt Romney again. The campaign mask came off. And I think both Elizabeth and Jack are right that we had this – it wasn't really a debate, actually. Mm-hmm. And there was a fundamental disconnect between Romney's critique of the president and the actual specifics of what he would do differently, which, in fact, there wasn't much. And so he would say, "This America is weaker. We have not provided leadership." But when it came time to the specifics, he offered, basically the Obama course of action. I thought what struck me was perhaps not since Kennedy and Nixon had you seen a case where a Democrat appeared perhaps more hawkish than the Republican nominee. And it made me think that once again, as we saw in domestic policy in the first debate and ratified in the second, Governor Romney, as we all talk about how general election candidates make a pivot after the primaries, he just waited until autumn. And that's the question now is, will the six independent undecided voters in Ohio go for it?
Well, let me probe you on that, John. If this is the Mission Impossible moment where, they reach under their chin and pull off the rubber mask and there they are, that suggests that the Mitt Romney we saw last night was the real thing, the real deal. Now, he has been more bellicose, certainly in the primary season and in mm-hmm. the general campaign trail, as you suggest. So all presidents moderate and pivot a little bit as we come to the home stretch. But you're suggesting that this is the real guy? This is who would govern? How do you know that?
Well, I don't. But I think the record in Massachusetts and a look at his biography suggests that this is a data-driven man. And when the data, when he was a primary candidate for president, when the data suggested you had to tack right, boy, did he tack right. And now when the data suggests that you have to tack to the center, boy, is he tacking to the center. So it raises an interesting question. Do you want a president who seems to move as easily with the data and the wins? It raises a very interesting question, I think, a really mm-hmm. profound one for a country that has gone through 12 years or so of an argument about having a president who doesn't respond to changing circumstances under George W. Bush. At what point is a realist a flip-flopper? And at what point is someone who adapts to reality as it shifts someone without a core? I think that – I would argue that that is the fundamental question about whether or not to vote for Mitt Romney.
Wow. All right. On foreign policy, Elizabeth, how do you look at that? I mean, you described some of the changes between what we've seen on the campaign trail and what we saw last night. John says, well, you've got a data-driven man here. He's talking here about campaign data coming in and what the governor needs to do in response to that. How does that work on the global stage? President Obama was critical of him for that, saying you're all over the map, but we've seen that if you set your sights on one course and don't change, a la George W. Bush, that can have downsides too. Is this appealing to the voters? Is this effective as a governing operational style, Elizabeth?
That is an excellent question. I can't answer that for you, but I can tell you that it's, you know...
Sure this you is, can, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Mitt Romney has done this.
You can resolve that.
Has revealed this part of himself 2 weeks before the election. It's only 2 weeks left. Now the question is, will voters who were watching last night and early returns suggest that not as many people were watching last night as the first two debates? Foreign policy never attracts quite the crowd that domestic policy does. Will they be reassured by this sort of more peaceful, more reasonable policy he set forth last night? Because they haven't been paying a lot of attention until now, and certainly not to the intricacies of foreign policy? Or will they be put off by this man who Obama says is all over the map? It's hard to know, I suppose, if you were not so sure about Mitt Romney and you saw him last night and you see, gee, he doesn't seem like he's a crazy. He seems like, he sounds an awful lot like Obama. Actually, what they both sound like, I'd like to say, is I was reminded last night that Obama said, I think it was in 2008, that the foreign policy he most admired was that of George H.W. Bush. And so both of them last night were embracing that, as we've talked about, that sort of the foreign policy of realism, mm-hmm. which is, you know, hard-headed.
Not ideological. See what comes up and deal with it.
Right, and deal with every issue on its own merits, and not with out of some, rigid ideology. And before I close, I would just like to say also that there was one, of course, in my neck of the woods, there was one very noticeable difference, and that is on the defense budget and defense spending. Romney did not back off and did not dispute the president when the president said, you know, you want to increase the defense budget by $2 trillion, which is actually $2 trillion over 10 years.
10 years.
But nonetheless, there is a big difference there.
That's very large. Both of them were happy to talk about that. Jack, slide President Obama under the microscope for a second here. Governor Romney says, look, we've got unraveling going on here. Do you think the world looks so great out there today if President Obama's done such a great job? Does that stick? How about that argument, Jack?
Well, I thought it was an effective argument. And when the president said that America's popularity is high in the Muslim world, that's not borne out by a recent big Pew poll, which shows dramatic fall in approval of American policy across the Middle East. The Brookings man in Doha has been quoted as saying President Obama is seen as weak in the Middle East. Why? Because he hasn't stood up to Israel.
Jack, please stand by. John Meacham, Elizabeth Buemiller, it's great to have all three of you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the last debate, foreign policy, Obama-Romney. Last time, side by side last night in Boca Raton, Florida, Elizabeth Buemiller is with us, Pentagon correspondent, former White House correspondent for The New York Times, author of Condoleezza Rice and American Life. John Meacham is here. Author of American Lion, Thomas Jefferson upcoming, contributing editor at Time magazine. Jack Beatty's here as well. Here's just one example last night on Syria of how the two sort of made their cases, and there seemed to be a lot of convergence. You heard Mr. Romney first, then moderator Bob Schieffer, then President Obama.
Our objectives are to replace Assad and to have in place a new government which is friendly to us, a responsible government if possible, and I want to make sure they get armed. And they have the arms necessary to defend themselves, but also to remove Assad. But I do not want to see a military involvement on the part of our troops.
Can we get a quick response, Mr. President? Because I want to ask about Egypt.
I'll be very quick. What you just heard Governor Romney said is he doesn't have different ideas. And that's because we're doing exactly what we should be doing to try to promote a moderate Syrian leadership and an effective transition so that we get Assad out. That's the kind of leadership we've shown. That's the kind of leadership we'll continue to show.
Governor Romney, Bob Schieffer, and President Obama last night. Now, Elizabeth Buemiller, let's just take Syria for a second. I mean, it seemed to me that overall there was this kind of tight, narrow, cautious quality to the whole conversation last night. You got a really tough problem here, and the president's insisting we're doing the right things, though everybody knows there's big problems there. Mitt Romney's saying he'd do more or less the same things. I mean, whether it's Syria or beyond, did you hear sort of big thinking last night from these two would-be leaders for the next 4 years of the country?
Well, certainly on Syria, I heard from both of them they do not want to get the U.S. involved militarily. But Romney has suggested more recently that he would be, you know, because Romney has said he wants to arm the rebels with lethal arms. So far, the Obama administration has only provided the rebels with some communications equipment and other non-lethal aid on the theory that they do not want this any kind of lethal equipment getting into the hands of the wrong people. And there's some evidence that has been happening already with
other countries. I mean, what does lethal mean here? Haven't we more or less signed off on small arms through Saudi Arabia?
It means anti-tank weapons. It means And also Romney said last night, which was interesting to me, that he did not want any kind of to establish a no-fly zone, which, as we learned in Libya, is you don't just declare a no-fly zone. Mm-hmm. It's a major military action, and people at the Pentagon have estimated it could take as long as 7 months to create a no-fly zone in Syria. So he was really pulling back from any kind of suggestion that he wanted to get the U.S. military involved in another war in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. That's a danger zone. If you're 2 weeks away from the election.
Jack, what do you make of the P peace theme thumping of Romney last night. Who's he going for there? I mean, he's sounded much tougher in other venues during this long now campaign season. You know, they're both fighting for margins here. We know that. What do you make of it?
Well, the experts say that he was looking for suburban women. That's part of he's opened up. He has an advantage with them now. He's behind, but not nearly so far behind as he was before the first debate. And he's really looking at that constituency and assuring them, you're not going to have war if I'm there. You know, but I'm struck with the with the war note here. Really, the path to war is paved with bipartisanship, whether in Vietnam, Afghanistan, or Iraq. And last night, both candidates, you know, took equally hard lines on Iran. They paraded the familiar horribles that would ensue from an Iranian nuke and said nothing about the cost of war with Iran. By contrast, former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has warned that such a war would be a catastrophe, quote, haunting us for generations. Gates is retired. No one in public life is making that case. Consequently, in a recent NBC poll, by 25%, Americans say if Iran doesn't stand down, attack. 44% believe that strongly favor an attack. The public, and there's no George McGovern out there to say, wait a minute, do we want a war with Iran?
I mean, George McGovern, the guy who lost everything except Massachusetts and the District of Columbia.
No, the George McGovern, who as early as 1963 with Wayne Morse and others in the Senate, was warning about Vietnam.
John, here we are. Did you see anything in that debate last night that would give you comfort that despite Mitt Romney saying peace and President Obama trying to position himself as the more contemporary man, you know, he went out to Romney as a man of the 50s, even the 1920s, anything? Here we are in this anniversary year of JFK on the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he famously came in and found a kind of backdoor deal with the Soviets to defuse it. Did you see that kind of impulse at work there last night?
You know, perhaps this is naive or optimistic of me, but I think both these men would find ways out of a cataclysmic war. I think that the Kennedy example is a very good one. Remember, he was on a learning curve from the Bay of Pigs in April of 61 when he'd felt bullied by the generals with their, as he put it, fruit salad. And
fruit salad, CIA. Which would mean, what was it, 500 sorties a day over Cuba in major military action to take out those missiles.
Well, exactly. But in the Bay of Pigs, he felt that he had been misled, or that he had not asked the right questions. Mm-hmm. And I think in one of the great moments, the good part of bipartisanship, Jack, was when Kennedy, who had expressed nothing but contempt for Eisenhower, calls Eisenhower after the Bay of Pigs and has him come to Camp David. And Eisenhower says, "Did you ever have a meeting and explore all the options?" And Kennedy's forced to say, there was a meeting, but no, I never got everybody together, which may, for those of us who lived through Iraq, we remember that President Bush never had a meeting either where he explored everything. So I think that both these men, it seems to me, are pragmatic enough that they would understand that the day two of any kind of strike against Iran is such a nightmare scenario that they would find a way out of it. Perhaps that's naive, but that's what I think.
Elizabeth, weigh in. There was a lot of talk about loyalty to Israel last night. Is that counterposed to the kind of pragmatism ultimately that John's talking about? Can those live together? Israel feels this threat more imminently.
Sure, although I think it was interesting that Romney, again, didn't if I were Bibi Netanyahu this morning, I would be wondering what had happened to my good friend.
Fire eating.
because he was much less hawkish than he has been on the threat of Iran, and said again that any kind of military action is a last resort, which is perhaps not the first thing that Netanyahu wants to hear. I was interested in the exchange about the exchange on Israel and when Romney went after Obama for not going to Israel yet as president, And then Obama shot back that, well, you know, he was there as a candidate, and just like Romney was, and he did not go to fundraisers while he was there. He went to Yad Vashem. So the president was ready with that. I think, again, 2 weeks before the election, of course, both candidates are going to embrace Israel as one of America's closest allies, and they both did that. But again, they were not embracing a war with Iran and the tough line in Iran that Netanyahu would have liked them to take.
Here's a bit from Romney's apology tour, Israel critique of the president, and then the president's response. Here's Mitt Romney.
Mr. President, the reason I call it an apology tour is because you went to the Middle East and you flew to Egypt and to Saudi Arabia and to Turkey and Iraq. And by the way, you skipped Israel.
Skipped Israel. The president shot right back. Here's a bit of his response.
When I went to Israel as a candidate, I didn't take donors. I didn't attend fundraisers. I went to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum there.
John Meacham, what's the barb in the president's retort to Mitt Romney there?
Well, that Romney's a cynical politician who has been using Israel for electoral map advantage and for fundraising dollars, and he, Obama, is the guardian of good and the forces of light in the world. I think that's the subtext, if not the overtext. I thought it was one of a couple of moments where the president's demeanor seemed to me disproportionate to the moment. It seemed a little harsher than the stimuli would have justified. I think once again he showed up to really do battle and found this more amiable, I guess, certainly a more elusive Republican opponent. And I think that's been a characteristic of all three debates.
Well, Jack, that was really interesting because the president saw himself judged having been thumped in the first debate because he showed up, you know, kind of with quietude himself. I mean, since then, it seems like there's no way he's going to be out aggressive, you know, looking to maintain, I guess, a presidential demeanor. But I mean, he was definitely the one rearing up on his hind legs last night compared to, as John says, the more amiable or presidential or what do you call it, Jack, Mitt Romney?
Well, yes, he was in his mittitude. He was Massachusetts Mitt. He was equable and reasonable and in favor of peace and women's equity, at least in the Muslim world. It's hard to debate somebody who keeps retreating like that and changing his shape. And the Republicans now are saying the president's aggressiveness really, you know, betrayed his worry that he's behind and that he thinks that he's got to do something, and that on the other hand, Romney's, you know, seemingly equanimity, that showed Romney is confident that he's ahead and he doesn't have to score those points. So they're all. It's interesting that the day after polls show that by a wide majority, voters think that Romney has passed the presidential threshold. In a CNN poll, by almost 2-1,
he looks presidential
enough.
Yes,
he looks. He looks presidential.
He can inhabit that character.
That's right. That's right.
Let's hear from our listeners. Natalie in Windsor Heights, Iowa. Natalie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I thought it was a strong debate for President Obama. I think that for those that were watching last night, we saw a strong president and a strong world leader. We saw Governor Romney, who was willing to say or do anything to try to get elected. He seemed to turn away from his neocon views and offer no explanation about these huge about faces. We can't trust him.
What about the argument that this is a man being practical? What about the argument he's just being practical and so he'd be practical in the White House?
You can't flip-flop without explanation. The other thing is I haven't heard anybody say this, and I don't know if it was just me in my living room last night. I thought Governor Romney looked like he was sitting on a tack, and I saw him stifle yawns at least 5 times. This is no yawning matter.
You're a better face reader than me, Natalie. Maybe you're right there, but I'm not sure. You know, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. I mean, they both have struggled over these debates to have the right demeanor when the split screen is up and the other guy's talking. But point taken. Let me get one more, if I may. Thanks, Natalie. Aaron in Savannah, Georgia. Aaron, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question was kind of more about just the general politics of defense. And I was curious, since neither of these two candidates really have a strong background in the military, I know that's one aspect of foreign policy, but they did spend a lot of time talking about naval strengths and horses and bayonets. So my question is what these guys think about defense, does it really even matter that much? Because aren't they, since neither of them really have a strong background in it, aren't they generally just going to accept the viewpoints, or at least, you know, listen to the arguments?
Aaron, we'll go to that question. Who did you find yourself leaning toward last night, Aaron?
I wasn't really convinced by one or the other. I guess I would lean a little more towards the Romney side, just because I think that it's less likely that he will cut defense spending. I think the president, even though he will, I think he's honest when he's saying that he will try not to, I think he's going to be ultimately unsuccessful in stopping sequestration.
Wow. Although he said last night that won't happen, we'll look at it. Aaron in Savannah, thanks very much for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's hear Romney last night. Here he was. He went after the president on the military budget.
Look, this, in my view, is the highest responsibility of the president of the United States, which is to maintain the safety of the American people. And I will not cut our military budget by $1 trillion, which is the combination of the budget cuts that the president has, as well as the sequestration cuts. That, in my view, is making our future less certain and less secure.
How bad is it? Here was Mitt Romney's example, criticizing the number of ships in the U.S. Navy.
Our Navy is smaller now than any time since 1917. The Navy said they needed 313 ships to carry out their mission. We're now down to 285. We're headed down to the low 200s if we go through with sequestration. That's unacceptable to me.
And here was the president's comeback.
I think Governor Romney maybe hasn't spent enough time looking at how our military works. You mentioned the Navy, for example, and that we have fewer ships than we did in 1916. Well, Governor, we also have fewer horses and bayonets because the nature of our military has changed. We have these things called aircraft carriers where planes land on them. We have these ships that go underwater, nuclear submarines. And so the question is not a game of battleship where we're counting ships. It's what are our capabilities?
Horses, bayonets, aircraft carriers. Elizabeth Mueller, you're at the Pentagon. How does this argument go down there? I mean, voters have to decide where they want to put their resources, but does the Pentagon see that they need the extra two, I guess, trillion Romney is proposing? Does the Pentagon think sequestration will come and hurt them?
Where do I start with all this? Yeah. There's so much here. Where do I begin? Let's start with the $1 trillion in defense cuts. This is Romney has said this for a long time. Here is the reality. Right now, there has been a little less than $500 billion cut out of the defense budget over the next 10 years. In other words, President Obama's defense budget, as it exists now, would basically just keep up with inflation over the next 10 years.
Is the Pentagon griping about that or not?
They agreed to it. It's been agreed to. It's just going to stay even with inflation. So it's not going to increase as much as it would have before these cuts. There's another $500 billion in cuts, which are on the table potentially if sequestration happens, which is what has been widely described by the military as these draconian cuts, which will go into effect if Congress does not make a budget deal before the end of the year.
And this is the sort of ugly fruit of those unsuccessful budget conversations a year before last summer that everybody thought this will never happen, and so that's why they put it there, right?
Right. So right now, Romney is not right to say these are the president has cut $1 trillion out of the budget. It hasn't happened yet. And by the way, that additional $500 billion in sequestration was agreed to by the House, by the Republicans. So this Congress agreed to this. So that's where we are now. Now, on ships, the president has actually, of course, the Navy will never say we don't need more ships. The Navy always wants more ships. But right now, the president has actually increased shipbuilding from George W. Bush's administration.
Elizabeth, hold that thought if you'd be good enough. With Elizabeth Buemiller, John Meacham, and Jack Beatty, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the last debate, foreign policy, Obama-Romney, last time side by side in this campaign season. You can join the conversation this hour. Did you see sharp differences last night on how America should interact with the world? Have these debates helped you make up your mind? Did they change your vote? Are you ready to vote and be done with it? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Elizabeth Buemiller is with us. White House, former White House correspondent for the New York Times, now at the Pentagon. John Meacham joins us today from Nashville, Tennessee, author of American Lion and Thomas Jefferson, forthcoming contributing editor at Time magazine. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us, 800-423-8255. Lots of response online. Itisandro says, OMG, Obama was so good last night that even Romney endorsed him. Well, not formally, I guess. Etta says, how about paying attention to the concise, knowledge, experience-filled comments by Obama? Measure Romney's empty buckshot approach last night. You're letting Romney off the hook, she writes to us here. You can join us, 800-423-TALK. Here's Mitt Romney, a little more on the budget. We want to take advantage of Elizabeth Buemiller's close expertise on that. Mitt Romney saying that you've got to pour in the resources.
We make decisions today in a military that will confront challenges we can't imagine. In the 2000 debates, there was no mention of terrorism, for instance. And a year later, 9/11 happened. So we have to make decisions based upon uncertainty. And that means a strong military. I will not cut our military budget.
He will not cut the military budget. In fact, he'll add to it. President Obama said, again, the math doesn't work.
Governor Romney's called for $5 trillion of tax cuts that he says he's going to pay for by closing deductions. Now, the math doesn't work, but he continues to claim that he's going to do it. He then wants to spend another $2 trillion on military spending that our military's not asking for.
So, Elizabeth, you have us through the $500 billion cut, which is coming, which is on the books, which the president wanted and the Pentagon's agreed to. The second $500 billion, which is in sequestration, the president said last night flatly, that's not going to happen. But, of course, nobody knows yet. And what about the further $2 trillion that Governor Romney wants to spend in the next decade?
Right. I'll try and spare our listeners from getting too far into the weeds on this. But basically, that is a calculation that the Romney wants to set Pentagon spending at 4% of GDP. Obviously, that depends on what GDP is over the next 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. But if you calculate out, let's say you, and they say they don't want to do it all right away. They know the economy is recovering, and so therefore, but you know, if you talk to independent economists who say and budget analysts, they calculate that even if you slowly ramp up to 4% of GDP for defense spending over two presidential terms, over 8 years, that still amounts to $1.8 trillion in increased Pentagon spending over the next 10 years.
What's the purpose of it? Does the Pentagon want it? Is there a need?
Well, the Pentagon is, I might tell you, is extremely silent on this topic right now because they don't want to get involved in the political campaign. Sure, the Pentagon always wants more money, but don't forget, under Bob Gates especially, he was cutting the budget. He thought that, after two wars in the Middle East and Central Asia, the time had come for a bit of a build down, and that was going on. The Pentagon has not asked for $2 trillion in extra defense spending over the next 10 years. This is absolutely true. But just if you look at the numbers, bear with me for a second here. By 2022, by these calculations, the defense budget, Obama's defense budget, would be $680-some billion. It's about 500 and some right now. Mm-hmm. Romney's would be $986 billion under his plan
annually.
That's a big difference. And the Obama critique of this is that you don't just pick a number for the defense budget and throw it against the wall. What you do is you set a strategy, you assess the threats, and then you decide on the number. And that is the president's critique of the Romney plan, which would, by the way, build a lot more ships than we have now.
John Meacham, what do you make then of Mitt Romney's it's just his position on this. It's going to be 4% of GDP, and that's $2 trillion over that amount of time. That's a lot of money. Is this a leftover from the primary season? Is this a base pleaser? Is there a rationale that you beyond political in terms of security that you can see here, John?
Well, I think every Republican since 1988 has looked in the mirror and seen Ronald Reagan. And I would argue that this is probably an ideological holdover of the peace through strength idea of the 1980s, and we know how well that worked out economically. The exchange you just played was the point of Governor Romney's was one of the more disconnected points of the evening, I thought, where he quite rightly says, we don't know what the threats are going to be. And he quite rightly pointed out that at this point in 2000, George W. Bush said, we are not nation builders. And then circumstances changed a year later, and he became a nation builder. Mm-hmm. And So Romney articulates the quite reasonable point that we don't know what's going to happen, so therefore we spend a lot of money on the military. But we don't know necessarily, as Elizabeth was just saying, without a strategic vision, which is by all accounts that I know of, Elizabeth, and correct me, is we should invest more in asymmetrical warfare. The technology right. of drones and intelligence gathering is hugely important.
Rather than tons of steel and iron and big stuff.
Well, yes. And it's why I thought the president was overly condescending, and that was a jarring moment
thing
for
me.
The
aircraft carriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he did that. That was the smart aleck in the back of the class moment. But the point is an interesting one, and without a strategic vision, just spending money seems to me unwise.
Jack, we don't know what the future will hold, but we do know we have a budget problem.
Yes.
Governor Romney talks all the time about it.
Yes, Greece, indebtedness, bankruptcy, and, you know, immense opportunity costs in unnecessary defense spending. And no one addressed this more eloquently than President Eisenhower, who in 1953 said, every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children.
Opportunity costs, and then just in terms of the deficit, how do you cover it? Reed in Chester, Vermont. Reed, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a Republican, and I was leaning towards, honestly, voting for President Obama early on. I like what he had to say, but I've come not to believe him. And last night kind of iced the cake. The United States, we're in a mess economically. We've got a wicked, wicked deficit that's going on. And Romney kind of hit it for me last night. We're not better off today than we were 4 years ago. We got bigger debt. It's growing. And then if the real point for me was, when he addressed the Middle East, when you look at all the trouble with Syria and Iran, we're really, really not better off in the Middle East today than we were 4 years ago. I'm not having four more years of it. I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney.
Reid, we have it loud and clear, and I'll pick up that sort of zone of instability in the Middle East. Let me get a couple more here. Thank you, Reid. Daryl in Marion, South Carolina. Daryl, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm shocked that the American as a whole and as a society accepts Mitt Romney as a legitimate candidate for the presidency of the United States. Clearly, he shows blatant inadequacies on foreign policy. He makes his case that he's this great businessman and he can get jobs and he knows all about the economy, yet he's going to come into office and, as stated numerous times, add $2 trillion just off the military adding, and they're not even asking for money.
I've served
in both the United States Marine Corps as well as the United States Army, and I can tell you that the United States military is leaner, smarter, technology is better. We don't need to do things the way we used to do it, and so you have to change with the times. The world has changed. If you go to the Middle East with the attitude that America is the biggest, baddest country on the planet, you will get absolutely nowhere. So his plan, he is reckless. He will start a war immediately.
Daryl, point taken, and we've got it. So they're back to back. You've got Reid, who's for him. Daryl, who's again him. Reid makes the point that you've got to have, and the governor made it last night. You've got to have a strong economy to stand up in the world. I mean, Elizabeth, as you listen to those responses to the debate last night, how are you thinking about American ears on these two men?
American ears.
How their arguments, the visions. There may not be as much daylight last night as we thought earlier, but, you know, about how their two sort of tones on the world go down with voters.
Well, they were both so critical of each other. I thought Obama seemed like he maybe I was reading too much into it, but I think it's very hard for a president to get on in a debate with a challenger and have to talk about foreign policy and defend his foreign policy when he's been in the Oval Office now for 4 years. He's seen the dire president's daily brief on all the threats facing the United States, and it's like, I'm in there, I'm making the tough decisions, I made the call on going after Bin Laden, and I have to sit here and talk to this guy. I think there's a bit of that comes through.
But 4 years ago, it was President Obama
exactly,
who had never sat exactly, in that commander
exactly,
chief
and then
seat.
Exactly. I wanted to go back to the just the military spending for one last thing,
yeah.
one last point, and also the kind of military we have now and ships versus the smallest navy
versus
since 1916.
Lean and smart, yeah.
The United States military does still use horses and bayonets, not as many as in 1916, but the Marines still use bayonets, as our caller should probably know. And also, there were horses used in Afghanistan in 2001 by special forces when they were in there calling in airstrikes.
Where are you going here, Elizabeth? You want to open more army ranches in Wyoming? or what?
I just thought I was amused by that last night. There's been a lot of exchange on Twitter about,
yes.
Hey, we still use bayonets.
Bayonets still there, but it's not exactly the tip of the spear anymore when you've got drones flying all over the place. I mean, John, what about Mitt Romney's he looks on the Middle East, and you can talk about a recitation of horribles. You can definitely do it there. Now, when he does it on the economy, you can see in the president's face, well, look at what I inherited, Mr. Romney, Governor Romney. What about in the Middle East and his criticism that it has not become more stable, more promising under this president?
Well, it hasn't, but... Winston Churchill, the grandson of the prime minister who died a few years ago, like many members of his family, was on the lecture tour a good bit. And when he was asked for a topic, say 6 or 8 months in advance, he would always give the Middle East, a turning point. Because, this is the hand fate has dealt us. We live in an unstable world, but because of a combination of economic, cultural, religious, political, geopolitical reasons, a particularly unstable region is hugely important to the security of the United States. And I don't think I was struck by, while the debate was going on, former President Carter. Actually, I think was in the Middle East and lamenting in his 88th year, I think, the lack of progress. And I don't know that one of the disconnects for me last night was Romney saying we have not provided leadership that led to a more stable region. But what would that look like? What would that be? And the lack of specifics suggested to me that whoever's in the Oval Office will have the same issues to confront, and that there's not a clear path forward on the road to stability in the most unstable region in the world.
Not now, not lately. maybe not ever.
Hopefully, yeah.
Maybe someday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I mean, Jack, there was also that tone last night, which we've been talking about foreign policy on this program and had some very big perspectives on it that weren't really represented there. I mean, there was a lot of, we've got to tell these people that. We've got to dictate this. We've got to dictate that. The era of the United States sort of dictating the course of the world seems well and truly behind us in many ways, but not a lot of acknowledgement of that at that table last night. What is that about, Jack? Can Americans not handle presidential candidates who don't act as though they can, they can be the symphony conductors of the planet?
I think you're onto something. I mean, the president said that Governor Romney had the economic policies of the 20s, the social policies of the 50s, and the foreign policy of the 80s. Well, I think they both had the sort of foreign policy tone of the 60s. Not a leaf falls from the tree without the United States being there and making sure it falls in the right place. As if we haven't gone through a period when we have seen the inutility, to put it safely, of military force around the globe. What has made change in the globe is political, essentially revolution in the Arab world. And the United States favored that. We got on the right side of that. And that, I think, is really the best peace. If our threat is from al-Qaeda, from terrorism, from jihadism, then the advance of democracy in the Middle East is our best weapon against it, not not force. And the idea that we can somehow control things that are going on, that's just nostalgia.
John Meacham. Yes.
Tom, can I just jump in? Because I think Jack's exactly right. One of the things that I think we have to recognize is that restraint is, in fact, a sign of strength. And restraint is a weapon in our arsenal. And choosing not to go on to undertake certain foreign adventures, military engagements, will in fact ultimately result in could result in a stronger United States, to go to the line of President Eisenhower's that Jack quoted.
John, let me ask you, here we go, three debates. So in sum, you know, three encounters, the polls are neck and neck. Does that mean, and they were not before, does that mean that whatever you thought of any given one, Mitt Romney has come out of this triplet of debates the winner? He certainly closed the polling.
I think so. I think that people can argue about whether he should have and whether the merits of his arguments were commensurate with the movement in the polls. And I think insofar as that reflects a changing reality, I think we always knew that this was going to be a close race. Since World War II, six of our presidential elections have been decided by minority votes. And if you throw in the presidents who have not quite gotten to 51%, that's 9 of 16. So this is a very divided country. And I think that it will be closely divided late into the night on November 6th.
Well, now we are well and truly on that home stretch. Hope we can talk with all of you again in and around the big event, Voting Day, just 2 weeks from today. John Meacham, joining us today from Nashville. Look for his Thomas Jefferson out next month. John, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Elizabeth Buemiller, Pentagon correspondent for The New York Times, author of Condoleezza Rice. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your insights.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jack, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.